Chicago's home for sports is on Twitch. Follow ESPN 1000 Chicago today.
You're listening to Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
All right, Jeff Passan joins us weekly. He's outstanding. You see him on ESPN. You hear him on other shows here on ESPN 1000. He joins us right now on the Corona Hotline. Are the Bears going to trade up and get a quarterback, Jeff?
He doesn't care about our Bears.
No, it's not that I don't care.
It's just
that I know it's not going to end well.
See, you're right.
And that's the sad part about it, guys. Having grown up in Cleveland, I know when situations are bound to end in disappointment, in distraught feelings, and sadness, and loathsomeness. And every time the Chicago Bears even think about a quarterback, it's like a curse. It's like it dooms him to mediocrity. And I just feel very sorry for all of my all of the Bears fans, listeners, including my sister-in-law Amy, who is so excited for the draft because she loves the NFL, and so full of hate for what the Chicago Bears aren't.
Sylvie, do you want to handle the segue from that conversation to what happened with the White Sox last night? Or you want me to?
I'd love to handle it. Both of them are disasters.
I didn't know that I didn't know that there was any real easy way to get to it, Jeff, but I guess the easy question is, what did you make of what happened?
This morning, I woke up and I texted a White Sox fan friend, said, I woke up this morning looking for a single. And that pretty much encompasses what happened yesterday, right? Like, I'm sorry, but down three, who looks for a single?
I mean, we got to save that for Tinder, right? Like, that's something for Tinder. That ain't for baseball talk, is it, Jeff?
I don't know. I mean, if you're looking for a home run, that might be for Tinder as well.
Okay, but, that's a good point.
It was on any night, putting Billy Hamilton up at the plate, down three with two runners on in the eighth inning, when you've got much, 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 much better options on your bench, it would be a bad move. Any given night, keeping Lucas Giolito in when it's clear to anyone what the stakes are. And by that, I mean he pitched one inning last time. It was a dreadful inning. It was a long inning. And then keeping him out there, dying on the vine for 114 pitches when he simply is not ready to throw that at this point in the season, but especially after a start like he had last time, that is a sin. Doing both in one night is embarrassing. And I think that it is the sort of thing that every White Sox fan out there feared would happen when Tony La Russa got hired after being away from the game for a decade. It is extremely difficult, guys, to manage a Major League Baseball game. I don't think managers get enough credit for the in-the-moment decisions that they have to make. But that's their job. That's what they're paid very handsomely to do. That's how you win baseball games. And when you put your team in bad positions, and he did that multiple times last night and has done that at other times this season, the criticism is not just warranted, but it should be raining down with holy terror right now. Because, beyond that, I don't think he knew how many outs there were in the inning with Giolito either. At least that's what he made it seem like in his post-game comments. Just the feel for the game right now with Tony La Russa 20-something games into the season does not seem to be there.
Let me read you something from ESPN.com on La Russa, okay? The line is, had La Russa forgotten to take his, quote, genius medication, Or had he become so blinded by his own brilliance that he simply outsmarted himself? Now that, Jeff, is from ESPN. But that is from 10 years ago on ESPN in the World Series when he botched the bullpen situation.
And blamed Derek Lilliquist for it. I remember that.
Right. And that was my worry, Jeff, that yes, Tony La Russa is a World Series Hall of Fame manager. He's brilliant. He has modernized the bullpen. But even in 2011, 10 years ago, he was sort of, quote, losing it. And his decision-making in the biggest time for his St. Louis Cardinals nearly cost them. So why would I to believe 10 years later, after not managing a game for 10 years and at the age of 76, that his decision-making would get better?
I'm going to say this. I don't believe that because a person is 76, he is incapable of thinking quickly and in the moment and making those types of decisions. I'm also not going to say that because somebody has been away from a game for 10 years that he can't walk back in and immediately grasp it and understand it and have that feel that he did once upon a time. What I will say is that the time away plus the age makes it more difficult. And I'm sorry, but when you're managing a team that has World Series aspirations, there is no learning curve. And what we're seeing right now, it's a question of, guys, what should Tony La Russa's job be here? Should he be managing the bullpen? That's not a rhetorical question. I'm asking you that right now. Should Tony La Russa, who clearly can't see when his franchise pitcher is tired, be in charge of bullpen decisions, or should Ethan Katz be the one who's making those choices?
I would be interested to know if Ethan came to Tony at any point last night and said, hey, look, Skip, go get him, or you should think about going to get him. Or is Ethan Katz maybe not there yet with that relationship because Tony is a Hall of Famer?
That's the thing. It's tough. It's tough. And he was not, like, Tony did not pick Ethan Katz. Ethan Katz came in, you know, as a Ray Vaughn guy. And is that divide there? Is it real? I have not seen anything or heard anything to make me believe that they don't get along, or that there are problems, or that there's friction. But I will say this, if there was a long-term relationship there, or if Ethan Katz were more empowered than he is, I think he would have a much greater hand in making those decisions than he clearly does right now. Because Ethan Katz is not leaving Lucas Giolito out there. Simple as that.
Jeff, what is kind of baseball protocol in that stage? Like, what responsibility is there for an accomplished pitcher to let somebody know that, hey, I'm out of gas? Or is that totally on the manager and the pitching coach?
It all depends on the pitcher. There are some guys who are more comfortable telling their pitching coach, hey, I got this much more. And there are some guys who essentially will say, like, watch me and do what you think is right. And Lucas Giolito, man, he's a fighter.
Right.
You know, he's a bulldog. And I think he's going to, I think he's going to be the sort of person who leaves the responsibility up to others. And maybe at some point later in his career, that's the kind of thing that changes as you get older, as you evolve, and as you know your body.
Let's put Jeff on hold, like, and we'll fix his phone here because he's getting. I think it's just a matter of the distance that he's talking with. Because I want to, just like I said with Robert, he's so good. I want to make sure that we all understand and can hear everything.
I thought that Lucas, his mannerisms, like walking behind the mound, I don't know if he was upset with himself or he was kind of, the way he was just kind of acting seemed different.
Right. And maybe he was sending a message.
Yeah,
I'm out of gas here, guys, because that's what he said afterwards. You were saying, Jeff, sorry.
Yeah, I mean, if you saw something different, that's because there was something different.
Right.
Like, he was tired,
yeah.
and that's what happened. And I think that, I don't know where I cut off there, guys, but I think some players are more comfortable saying, hey, I'm cooked, you know, like, I can't give you any more. Whereas some guys are going to say, hey, watch me, and if you see something,
tell me. Lucas Giolito is not the sort of guy who's going to pull himself out of a game because he believes that frontline pitchers should be in there to get outs. But there's also the fact that there needs to be a support system in place to make sure that he doesn't get himself and his team, by extension, in a pickle. And that's what happened last night. It was poor communication. And I'm not going to sit here and blame the pitcher because I don't think it's on him. Ultimately, it's not his choice, guys, whether he stays in or comes out. And if that choice is taken out of his hands, all Tony La Russa has to do is say to him, it looks like you're done. Nice job, kid. Pat him on the butt and go to that bullpen.
Mm-hmm. Jeff Passan joining us, Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000. I want to ask you about the Cubs. I came in with low expectations for the Cubs. When they traded Darvish, they signaled to me that it's more about restocking the farm system and trying to do it here in a year or two where they can be better and that this team wasn't going to compete for a World Series. So I was accepting of that. But I got a sadness yesterday watching them, Jeff. Like I was watching the end of an era. You know, like I was watching the 2010 Cubs before.
He's laughing at you.
Yeah, well, are you laughing at me because.
We're laughing with you.
I mean, do you understand where I'm coming from, or are you making fun of me?
I'm laughing because, like, it's funny because it's true. Right? I mean, that's what this feels like. And there's a sadness to it. I think it gives you a greater appreciation for 2016. Like I was having a conversation a couple days ago with a Cardinals fan, and his contention was that baseball was a worse place now because the Cubs won.
And of course, typical Cardinal fan.
I was just going to say, of course, a Cardinals fan is going to say that. But this wasn't like him being a Cardinals homer. I think it was more that the romance of, you know, having a group of fans and a franchise that has waited that long just went away, and the stakes just aren't the same. I tried to argue with him. I think that's a bunch of crap because I don't think anybody on the north side of Chicago or around the city who roots for the Cubs looks at what they're doing right now and feels like 2016, which is like, it feels like 20 years ago, right? It doesn't feel like yesterday. That celebration, the party, the parade, doesn't feel like it happened very recently. I think Cubs fans are the same miserable people that they were before 2016.
Amen.
And I say that with all of the love in the world. Your misery is shared by so many and bonds you as much as anything in your life. So to acknowledge that this great moment that Cubs fans were able to share together is coming to an end and is nearing, and there's almost a countdown to it, it's bittersweet, and it does. It should make you sad.
Yeah. I wasn't mad that they didn't. Like they only had two hits. I was really sad. I'm like, this is real. Just they're all not as good, and they're not good together, and it's going to end, and they're all going to get traded.
Bet against them every night. Make some money.
I will say this. Chris Bryant looks pretty good.
Yes, he does. Yeah, yeah. And they're going to flip him,
and
right?
Contreras, you know, I mean, there's still value to him, I would think, whether you keep him or you decide to move him.
And the reality, guys, is that even though Javi struck out 6,000 times and walked negative 12, he's still, like he's still an okay, like, no, he's not okay. He's still a good baseball player. He's still, like, the defense and the base running and the power, he is the most frustrating good baseball player you'll ever see.
Yeah. Really quick, is a no-hitter getting 27 outs without a hit or just completing a scheduled baseball game, however many innings they decide, with a no-hitter at the end of that baseball game?
The latter. And that's, listen, Major League Baseball opened a Pandora's box when it said we're going to do seven-inning doubleheaders. If the game is 7 innings and 21 outs, if all of the statistics in the game that is 7 innings and 21 outs count, yes, then it's a no-hitter. and you can put no-hitter with a 7 in parentheses. You can have a different category for it. I don't care. But if you end a full baseball game as scheduled with no hits allowed, then you threw a no-hitter.
Good common sense thought there, Jeff. Good way to end our conversation. Don't you think? Or you got something else you want to say?
No, I mean, you guys are the host.
Well, I got another.
I've never heard that in 14 years from Waddle. He just tried to end the interview.
I thought that was a good mic drop right there. Yeah. That was a good spot. I could sit here and we could spin a tale about how pitchers are, you know, just eating up hitters, and we could talk about that for
next
hours, but
week,
we don't have time for
next
that.
Week.
I thought this was like mic drop.
You said quickly.
Yeah,
you
know,
I tried to be succinct. I appreciate brevity. You know, I didn't know
what the hell he was looking at me for either, Jeff. I was like, you asked for a quick answer. I was like, he gave you a quick answer. All right, wrap it up. Let's go.
Well, we enjoy you too. So thank you.
Hey, Sylvie, by the way, the hair looks phenomenal.
Well, thank you.
The hair?
Yeah.
I've been telling you that for a month.
It's because this is what happens, Jeff. When you dress like a slob for years and one day you wear a button-down shirt, you look good. You're dressed up. When you have had bad hair for your entire life and then all of a sudden you're styling it different, now all of a sudden I'm a good hair guy.
Looks good. It does look good.
Yeah.
I've been telling him that for a long time, Jeff.
I'm glad you should.
Yeah.
Keep reminding him. I mean, it makes a difference. You know, my 13-year-old last year, like right before the pandemic hit, said to me, "Dad, you have old hair."
Yeah,
it cut deeper than anything he's ever said to me.
I texted.
Like, he's right. The last time I tried styling it differently was like in the 90s. So change the hairstyle, and now people think I have good hair.
And one day watching SportsCenter, I texted you about that. I go, "Wow, you changed your hair! Look at that."
You did. And I appreciated that. Now I'm repaying the favor.
Thank you.
Listen, we should all just be very thankful that the three of us always still have our hair.
Yeah, for sure.
I would be lying if I denied using performance enhancing drugs to adhere my
really?
Breaking news, playing the sound or whoa?
Yeah.
Listen, when you have ears like I do, baldness is an ugly thing. So I was just trying to stave off. I got to be on TV, you know?
Yeah.
What are you, a Restore guy? Are you a Rogaine guy?
What are we shampooing that thing?
Yeah,
what are we doing? Are we adding to it?
I'm a pill since my mid-20s guy. Nice. And let me tell you, I'm 40 now, turning 41 in September. Sucker works.
Oh, I like that. That's a good endorsement. All right,
there's
Jeff.
Your mic drop right there.
There he is.
That's pretty good. That sucker works. Ow.
Dropping the mic because I'm not bald. I love it.
See you, Jeff.
Thanks, Jeff.
Bye, guys.
That's why we love passing. We start with Bears. We talk some baseball. La Russa. We talked about the Cubs. And then we talked about how he's using performance-enhancing drugs for his hair.
I would have never guessed he was follically challenged. Ever.
Never. Ever. No.
Would have never guessed that.
It's no Take That Nation, right?
Now, I've never run my hand through his hair the way I did Brian Urlacher after he had the Restore treatment.
All right. So weigh in on La Russa, on the Cubs. Bears, whatever you got, 312-332-3776. I want to continue the La Russa talk coming up next.
It can be sad when you miss your favorite interview. Don't despair. Podcasts are ready on the all-new ESPN Chicago app. It's Waddle and Sylvie.
ESPN 1000.
It's the first month of the season. We're just about done with the first month of the season. Tony La Russa had the Giolito mistake yesterday, had the Billy Hamilton mistake yesterday. Tony La Russa had Nick Williams in the lineup for a game, only to have the Sox DFA him the very next day. Who did he not have in the lineup that day? Was it Vaughn?
I think Vaughn
or Mercedes? Was,
we were questioning why. I think both.
Yeah, Mercedes wasn't in the lineup, right?
That is correct. Yeah.
Tony La Russa's had the Matt Foster situation where he apologized in Seattle that he left Matt Foster out to dry, and he also had the review situation in Anaheim where they did not tell the umpire in time if they wanted to review or not. Whatever you think, if he would have been safer out on that play, La Russa said it came on them too quickly. There were
there were questions about Tony La Russa's decision-making coming into the season, and nothing that has happened in the first month of the season makes you feel better about it. And like I said about what happened in the 2011 World Series, this is a team ready to win now. This isn't a team that is learning from a great old-time manager new ways. This team is ready to win. This team is ready to take off. And the decision making is only going to get bigger in September and hopefully for Sox fans, October. And every decision is going to be under the microscope. And if he can't get them right now, you're going to have a manager that's going to cost you games, important games, in the most important time in the season.
Well, I mean, the common theme is, and I think you and I are on the same page here, is we'd be killing Ricky for this.
We'd be killing Joe. We'd be killing Ricky. Yeah. This is not an anti-White Sox thing. This is not an anti-age thing. This is a manager who we had questions about his decision making, and it's absolutely panning out that way. It went against the grain. They knew it went against the grain. They knew they were going to, like I always said, they're the ones who conducted the experiment. Don't be surprised when you're under the microscope. You are the ones who created the experiment. Yeah.
I was just a little, it was a little odd to see. I know Giolito can be kind of demonstrative at time, but I don't think I've ever seen him kind of stalking around the back of the mound the way he was
right
in that seventh inning. Almost like that was the hint that, you know, hey, listen, I don't have a whole lot left. And again, they've got to get on the same page. Nobody knows Giolito better than Ethan Katz.
Right.
Nobody.
So what is it? Is he scared to say something to La Russa? Is La Russa ignoring him? But like, there's an issue here.
Okay, like, I connect this to the failed instant replay, where everyone's like, okay, now you know it can't happen again.
But these are basic things, Waddle. Things you hammer out before the season.
I'm with you.
110 pitches. We didn't even mention Lance Lynn is on the DL not long after Tony La Russa pitched him a lot of pitches on a day that you were questioning.
My point is that if you're Ethan Katz and you know this guy as well or better than anyone, then your voice has got to be loud in that situation.
Well, like, maybe he's not hearing me. I mean, I didn't mean that like that way. I meant maybe he, I don't know.
Maybe he's just going on his own gut decision.
I know that he went with the single. Billy Hamilton is a crappy hitter. Needing a single, like Carmen was saying.
They were down three.
You need a three-run home run, first of all. And second of all, you don't have the right guy to get any sort of hit.
No.
Billy Hamilton is on the White Sox.
Defense
because
and base
he's
running.
Been cut from many different teams because he cannot hit.
Not only looking for the single, wasn't Mercedes on second?
Yeah.
So right. getting Mercedes, him home. But that truck ain't getting home on a single.
Right. You're right. Yeah. Tom in Glendale Heights, you're on ESPN 1000. Hey, Tommy.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Sylvia, on behalf of all White Sox fans, I need you to adopt Andrew Vaughn. Maybe he'll get some consistent playing time.
I could do that. Didn't he have a hit streak going, and then they kept
I'm
him
so
strapped
glad you
to
brought
the bench?
That up. Absolutely. He was on a five-game hitting streak. Five-game hitting streak. And you don't have him in the lineup, Tony? What are you doing? Zach Collins, I'm not the biggest Zach Collins fan, to be honest with you, but the previous game, Zach Collins had three hits. What is Tony La Russa doing? I'm tired of seeing Lamb in the outfield. Rick Hahn, DFA that guy, because that way Tony won't play him. I mean, it's just a joke. Like, what is going on with this team? It's inconsistency. Let me ask you this question, Sylvie. Go back to 2015. The Cubs do the service time manipulation, whatever, with Chris Bryant. They bring him up. And then what would you say if they never played him?
Right.
You'd be furious.
You're right. Like, you play him.
Yeah, Andrew Vaughn, I understand it's not an exact comparison, but I think of Andrew Vaughn as our version of Chris Bryant. Like, obviously Chris Bryant can play, third base. He's a better overall kind of defender and whatnot. But in the batter's box, they are comparable. Andrew Vaughn and Chris Bryant are two of the best college hitters in the past, like, 15 years. He will only get better if you play him, and he will improve in left field if you play him. This is a joke.
Right, especially in the Billy Hamilton situation. I'm not going to get into Chris
Bryant. I think Vaughn actually, I wouldn't go there, but I think Vaughn has proven that he is solid enough at first and in left field.
Waddle's got some White Sox news, some good news to pass along on a downer day. If you want to weigh in on the LaRue Musa decisions, 332-3776. The Cubs sadness that I had on my mind. Well, I know we have some Bears callers on hold, too. We want to get to Bears. It's been a hot day today. It's going to remain that way on ESPN 1000.
It's a lot better than the 10 Zoom meetings you've been on today.
This may take a couple of days, maybe more.
Tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000 and listen to Waddle and Sylvie on Chicago's home for sports.
ESPN 1000.
I did what Waddle suggested. I just took, I'm following the Waddle. I just took the White Sox on the run line.
Yeah.
So I got win by two.
Yeah.
And I boosted it with my 50% profit on any baseball game this week. $15.
Yeah. That's a unit and a half for you.
Unit and a half.
Yeah,
for
you
me.
you don't mind telling everyone how big your unit is.
No, I got a few plates in the air though. So I've
you're rolling.
I had a cold night.
Okay.
Oh, well, I mean, I lost the Tim Anderson bet.
But you've had a nice run.
I have lately. I've been a little more selective, and I like the odds boost.
There you go.
A couple of things. Luis Robert tested negative.
Negative, yes, and could be in the lineup tomorrow.
That is great news for the White Sox. I also see someone from NBC Chicago tweeting, Slavko Bukovic, who is a producer over there. He tweeted out a video of Miguel Cabrera. Slavko wrote, whoa, Miguel Cabrera says Nick Madrigal was telling Giolito and Grandal that the Tigers were passing signs from second. And then I guess after the game, Cabrera said, quote, come on, this is BS. I don't play that game. You need to respect. Get the F out of here.
Nicky, two signs.
And, yeah, I mean, but if they want to steal signs, they could steal signs from second.
Yeah,
and
isn't that kind of...
But if Madrigal wants to tell Giolito he thinks they're stealing signs, he could do that too, right?
Like, you don't have any problem. I mean, like, if they start banging garbage cans, that's different.
Right.
But, like, sign stealing from second base has been part of baseball for old-time baseball guy. How long has sign stealing been in the game?
No, what are you talking about? We would never do those sorts of things. We played upstanding, good American baseball. We wouldn't steal signs, but let me tell you this on the side. What we would do on the side is what we would do is we would go and we would give them the hot hand is what we would call it. We'd take this stuff, and it was called a pomade. It was a fine pomade. We put it in their jocks before the game. We'd sneak into the locker room, and we put the pomade in the jocks. That way they'd get the sticky hand, the sticky hot hand, and that would really mess with them, Tommy. That's how we got them. We didn't steal signs. Are you kidding me? We were half drunk before the games.
It was in their jock.
Yeah,
how did that affect their hands?
I was going to wonder the same thing.
My hand is sticky.
Riles and Gridley, you're on ESPN 1000. What's up, Riles?
Oh, hey, fellas.
Hey.
I think Tony picked a bad year to stop drinking. So,
all right. Come on now. All right, we got to let him go. Riles, I like you, but come on now. Let's play fair. I mean, we're talking some baseball here. Brian in Bridgeport, you're on ESPN 1000. Hey, Brian.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good.
I mean, this is off the topic of the White Sox, but I heard you say about just kind of sadness at the beginning of the season to the Cubs. And, yeah, it kind of started for me, too, when saw the Darvish trade and then, obviously, Theo stepping down, letting Lester go, Quintana go, Schwarber go, and then... I mean, I thought they'd at least compete a little bit, but they don't seem like they even care to compete.
Well, the first clue to me was the trade of Darvish. And I get it. Maybe we'll be part of our conversation with Carmen, the good kid, tomorrow when we get together for a little crosstalk.
Right. We're going to put that on our podcast, by the way. We're going to be uncensored.
Yeah. I mean, look, I'm not telling you that the Darvish experience in Chicago from start to finish was great. All I do know is he had fixed himself. And if you were serious about winning at $25 million a year, that's not a lot to pay a top-line starter. Like, if you were serious about winning, keeping Darvish in your rotation probably was the right thing to do.
Yeah. I knew they weren't going to be good. Like, this isn't me burying my head in the sand thinking they're going to win the World Series. But just watching them last night, there was no anger. And I was really sad. I'm like, they're all going to be going out the door. They can hit together. It's another one of these two-hit games, you know, and where's the hope? The bullpen looked bad. They're hitting, you know. We know they could score 7. We know they could score 15. It's these games where they get two lousy hits happen too often.
I say it all the time. Don't use them all up today, boys. You may need a few tomorrow.
Yep. Steven in Columbus is on the line. He wanted to talk some Bears. He was accusing me on Twitter earlier, and he's called the show lots of times.
Yeah.
Thought we were buds. He says that I don't care about the facts or any of the realities.
Well, this is a
reality
show.
Well, no, that I spin it my way. I think I've summed that up correctly. Have I gotten that right, Steve?
How you guys doing? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I could hear you.
All right. I have to apologize. I think I might have got a little bit carried away with this, what I meant by that. What I meant to say was I think overall in the industry, there are people like Stephen A. who demanded that Pace and Nagy should be fired for drafting Trubisky and failing to develop him. I think we all know the results. That fact, I think Trubisky, I know Yurko went on a rant himself today that he couldn't get much out of him. And I think despite Nagy's shortcomings, hey, we won 28 games. Is that enough? No. I think we could definitely do better. And I think Nagy and John DeFilippo, I have a little more confidence in DeFilippo as a quarterback's coach. You know, and I know Nagy was here in Columbus watching Justin Fields' workout. They know that this is their only opportunity, one shot to get the quarterback that they like, the quarterback that they can run his style of offense and score more points. That's a fact, okay? And I think that there are people like
that actually
Nagy who always
that's your opinion, right?
And their narratives. That's what I got so tired of listening to sports radio and watching sports, which I kind of had to take a break from, even listening to your show. Because it wasn't doing my mental health any good at the time with the pandemic and everything. So I apologize for that.
What has got you most twisted up about what comments?
Stephen A. spewing and, you know, saying that Nagy and Pace should be fired for drafting Trubisky or something. When we all know that Nagy was a head coach the year after he got drafted. I mean, who's going to call him out for that? I know Stephen A. is a big star, but who's going to call
him
out?
Well, I think,
kind of
okay, but Stephen, like, we try to play it even here. Like, nobody is going to criticize Matt Nagy for the drafting of Mitchell Trubisky. I think everyone understands that. But I do think it's fair to criticize Matt Nagy for not adjusting the game plans and the style of offense to what Mitch did do fairly well. It took him too long to get there. Matt also was probably the loudest voice in the room, Stephen, when they decided to trade for Nick Foles.
And then they couldn't communicate together, right. Stephen. All right, so they have this we know each other thing, we run the offense. Next thing we know, on Monday Night Football, they don't even see eye to eye.
And I get that. They're both headstrong in some ways. And I think Nagy may have learned, at least when he gave up play calling, and then probably saw Trubisky still, you know, struggling with some of the deep ball accuracy. And we all saw that. The fact that Trubisky only got a backup job with Buffalo, I think speaks volume about maybe Trubisky isn't that highly regarded, which
obviously adds
more fire to the
I think also, Stephen, and we do appreciate you.
Can I say one thing to Stephen? Stephen, I'm cool with you calling me an idiot for an opinion, but don't come.
Don't
go on Twitter and say that I ignore facts and that I'm not in, and then I do stuff for ratings. That's BS, Stephen. You've called the show enough where you know I'm not spinning it for any sort of way. I want this team to win. And don't say
I
ignore facts.
Okay. I apologize for that.
Okay. Thank you, Stephen.
I forgot
that.
That
pisses me off, though. Like, when I'm ignoring facts, like, I was arguing.
Maybe he meant a fax, F-A-X. He sent you a fax.
312-332-3776.
They've broken you. They broke you last
year. I am on edge. We are, 26 hours away from the NFL draft? I am on edge because, yes, my Bears team has me twisted for years.
Look, you can make the argument that while your struggle to execute your passing game, maybe you should focus a little more on your running game as well. I mean, like, look, there are some issues here that I think are up for fair criticism on both fronts. Both the procurement of talent and the development of said talent, I think that you can find ways to be seriously critical and professionally critical of some of the stuff you've seen recently.
All right, so Tony La Russa, I guess, has addressed this whole sign-stealing thing that we brought up.
Uh-huh.
So we're going to play you some of that coming up. But we need a contestant as well for my wife or radio partner. Do you want to play? Today I've got three clues. Who said them? Was it Waddle or was it my wife? 312-332-3776. Caller 30 gets to... Let's do caller 20 for the Bears draft pick. Caller 20 gets to play 332-3776.
This is the home of Waddle and Sylvie for the ride home. Weekdays 2 to 6 on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports.
All right, before we get to my wife or radio partner, I told you earlier that someone from NBC Sports Chicago tweeted out that Miguel Cabrera says Nick Madrigal was getting Giolito and Grandal, was telling them that the Tigers were passing signs from second base. Miguel Cabrera then denied that, saying, come on, this is BS. I don't play that game. You need to respect. Get the F out of there. So Tony La Russa, this is right now, right before the game. He met the media, and La Russa addressed the situation that Cabrera brought up.
Heard about it. And, my comments are, Miguel is a guaranteed Hall of Famer. He's earned the respect, and if he says he's not getting help from second base, then he's not getting it. But we do encourage our middle infielders to actively be guarding, because that is a ridiculously popular thing. If Nick was actively defending against that, then I'm all for it. But I give Miguel the respect he deserves. He says he doesn't get the signs, and he doesn't get them.
I agree with La Russa there.
Yeah, I agree too. I'm just thinking, great, now Grandal's got to worry about not getting his glove hit from his hand and protecting his signs.
That's a lot.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I'm not playing tonight. Well, going to have to worry about his signs being stolen tonight.
La Russa then was talking about what we brought up too in his pregame conversation about Giolito and correcting the issues. Take a listen to this.
Yeah, I'm paying attention during the game. So when it's over, if somebody thinks I made a mistake, then it wasn't because I was distracted and falling asleep or anything. But probably the thing you look at the most is the inning before. The sixth inning was not an easy inning for him, but he came back and got a punch out of the cleanup hitter. But I know Ethan talked to him between innings, and there was no mention. So I think walking the first guy, and you could see he was agitated, that might have been another tip off. But in the end, like I said, the time with the extra rest he had, and I felt confident he could get it. I was surprised, as you could tell, when he said, he felt like he was running out of gas. And the buck passes to the desk. The guy makes the decision. That's me. So I take the responsibility.
All right. Well, there it is. So Tony La Russa on the Giolito situation. I mean, look, even if you don't, you still think he's got something left, and you still think after the walk he can get the guy out and he homers. After that home run and you give up the lead, you go get your ace. You don't leave him out there to drive for four more pitches at 110 pitches to go up to 114 after he just gave up the go-ahead home run.
At any point, did Ethan Katz go to the mound? Did anyone go to the mound?
I don't think so. I don't know. What was going on?
I don't know. I was locked into hockey last night. Hockey's still in Television 1 for me. Like, I get it. The Hawks season's over.
All the cup years. Waddle's can't get him to watch damn Hawks game.
No, I watched him, but I waited till the postseason. Like, I'm watching more hockey now than I've ever seen.
It's amazing.
It is amazing, and I can't explain it.
All right, if you want to weigh in on the Sox stuff, I want to take a lot of calls in the 5 o'clock hour. We are guest-free, 332-3776. Let's get to my wife or radio partner.
It's now time for my wife or my radio partner.
That way. Now, see that? Always smiling. Hi, honey. Judging, watching. Look at the baby. Look at the baby.
My wife.
Does this make me look fat? Did you take out the trash?
Or my radio partner.
I look at myself in the mirror and I can't stand what I'm seeing.
It's a little cool today, isn't it? It's a little cool today for golf, isn't it?
My wife or my radio partner.
With Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000.
After a warm day yesterday, it is cool for golf today. It's brought to you by Swift and Sons, American Steakhouse in the West Loop in the Fulton Market District. I had lunch yesterday with one of their great partners, Kevin Boehm from the Boca Restaurant Group. It's Rob Katz. It's Kevin Boehm, the award winners of the Boca Restaurant Group, teaming up with their executive chef, Chris Pandell. It's a Chicago Steakhouse with a modern twist. You're going to love it.
trust us on this. Go to Swift and Sons, then get back to us and tell us how much you loved it. Swift and Sons available for takeout. They've got reservations. You could sit outside. And when you're in the Wrigleyville area, check out Swift and Sons Tavern across from Wrigley
Field. Let's do this.
John in St. John. Hi, John.
How you doing?
We're good. Fantastic. I'm going to give you three statements. We don't need to review the music. We know which is my wife and which is my radio partner. I'm giving you three statements, though, and you have to get them right. You have to tell me, did Waddle make the statement or did my wife, Allie, make the statement? Two out of three gets you the prize, all right?
Sounds good.
Here we go, John. Statement number one, the firemen hung up on me because they have a call. The fireman hung up on me because they have a call.
Allie.
This old man, why was she calling the fireman?
The, this was a Tuesday situation, and I was getting... No, this was Monday. I guess the... what? Not the fire. What's the carbon monoxide detector?
Oh, yeah. You don't want that going
off. Was beeping. And so I said, she's asking me what to do, what to do.
Change your battery.
I said, it could be the battery. I go, just to make it safe, because carbon monoxide is no joke.
That's right.
Call the non-emergency line.
Good job.
And ask them what you should do.
Yes.
And then she texted back that they hung up on her because they had a call. So, but it was the battery.
Yeah. We did.
So we rectified the issue. Good job sniffing that out, John.
Well done, Johnny.
You need one out of these two
John
correct.
St. John. St. John and John. St. John and...
Stop it. Statement number two. The looks of utter disdain I'm getting at Jewel as I carry a case of Coors Light, popsicles, and pizza. The looks of utter disdain I'm getting at Jewel as I carry a case of Coors Light, popsicles, and pizza.
Allie.
Very good.
Go, John. Like, that's not an Allie problem. That's a them problem. That's a them problem.
I texted her because if you come over tomorrow, if I have some people over tomorrow for the draft, I want to make sure I've got Coors Light now.
And popsicles. Because you know how everyone loves a good popsicle when it's 14 degrees out.
Well, my kids eat popsicles year-round. You know, they,
yeah, that's a them problem. That's not an Allie problem. Anyone giving you a dirty look for carrying whatever it is.
You're going to love it there at Swift & Sons, John. Just well for you-know-what in giggles. Statement number three. It was a bridge too far. It was a bridge too far.
I'll go with Waddle.
Damn, John, were you in our meeting today?
You know, the second one knew for sure because, you know, Tom drinks wine. So he wasn't picking up beer.
I drink
beer, too.
I drink it all, brother. I drink it all. If water was alcoholic, I'd drink water more often.
It was making, we were having a White Sox Woody conversation again. Just, and,
I think I got support from the other two members of this show. Do I not?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's three on one.
It was a bridge too far for you.
All right, John. Enjoy Swift and Sons. Let us know how it is. All
right, John and St. John.
Will do. Thanks, guys. You guys are great.
Thank you. We appreciate you. There's John. If you want to weigh in on the Bears, if you want to weigh in on the La Russa situation, if you want to weigh in about the Cubs sadness, we are guest-free. We want to take your call. I'm sad. I'm a sad Cubs fan these days. 332-3776.
Buck up, buttercup.
We're back in 2 short minutes.